Make sure to etch your own path in the pantheon of human history. This has been Black History Month 365. BAM 365, where you find every day Black history is made.
Ray Lynch signals Wednesday, 8 p.m., and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston, Texas, devoted entirely to storytelling, right here on listener-sponsored 90.1 KPFT Houston. Along with our team, co-host Mary Edgerton, Warren Holloman, Hank Rubicek, engineer Nicole Rocherlin, Floyd the Wonder Dog, and our newest pledge, intern, Teddy Puig. I'm Greg Audell, co-host for this spectacular program, and I am so proud to be the Interim Development Director for KPFT, and I'm also thrilled to be your host for the next hour. We bring you the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who take us on journeys through unfamiliar worlds and through the windows of their souls with stories that stretch the boundaries of the human heart. So just relax, just as we do every Wednesday with cold milk and fresh chocolate chip cookies generously spread throughout the studio and lobby. And I've really been looking forward to bringing you tonight's guest, Debrina Sandifer. Debrina is a lifelong advocate for the arts. She believes that arts can be used for healing, team building, and as a catalyst for social change. She's applied her theory as an active artist in theater and film, a leader in the areas of visual art and dance, and as a creative facilitator charged with helping victims of domestic violence and abuse. Debrina Sandifer, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Thanks so much for having me. I feel very honored to be on your show.
Well, we are honored to have you. I've got a question for you. Where are you from originally?
I am born and raised in Houston, Texas.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. That makes two of us in here. We're a rare breed, but a special breed. and on your resume, I was looking over it. It is both long and it is deep. And one item I didn't mention is your efforts in developing, is it Assyrian Arts?
Assyrian Arts.
Can you tell us about it?
Sure. So I developed Assyrian Arts basically just as something to stand behind my life's work. It's meant to present stories that are underrepresented and to encourage everyone to have a voice. So we do various things, like we do entertainment for private and corporate events, professional development for artists, programming for adults and children. The list goes on and on.
Well, that's great. How long have you been in practice?
Formerly under Assyrian Arts for a little over a year, but I've done things like this
for... The first year's the toughest.
Yes, but we've been doing really, really well, so I'm happy about that.
Congratulations. Well, that's great. I hope year number two is even better. And, I've noticed you and I seem to run in very similar artistic circles, it seems. I first met you late one night at a gallery in Montrose where a locally renowned artist, Lynette McDonald, artbylynette.com, was having a show where we discovered our shared HSPVA connection. Then I saw you in a one-act play at a performance in which our very own Warren Holloman had a wonderful play debut. What is it about the Houston art scene that motivates you to be so involved in so many different areas?
Well, because I'm born and raised in Houston, Texas, and the city is so large. It's also so diverse. There's tons of things to get into and explore. So it's always exciting to find new groups of people, and I also want to be a part of nurturing the upcoming next generation of artists. So I just love to be involved in it.
And I know logically, yes, Houston is a city of about, 5 million people in the great area, but I still feel it's a small town, because you do see the same people over and over, and you're like, oh, this is someone I want to get. And the more we talked, I thought, she is going to make a great guest. You strike me as an extremely positive person you've always had a smile on your face every time I've seen you, and it smacks of optimism and resilience. But your first story reminds us how resilient people can and must be. Will you share it with us?
Absolutely. So my first story, it takes us back to when I was 3 or 4 years old. I had an uncle that was living with my family. At the time, I was the only child. And with this particular uncle, he became one of my favorite uncles. We would watch movies together. He was a vet and had a leg injury from his, you know, time on being in active duty. And I would always forget which leg was injured. And I would somehow magically always jump on the hurt one. So that's funny. But we would talk, we would play, we would watch movies. He would encourage me. And as I mentioned, I was the only child at that particular time. So I had my bedroom, and then I also had a playroom, which was immediately next door to my bedroom. So being that he was living with us as a guest at the time, my playroom then served as like a guest bedroom. So again, I was a little kid. I didn't know everything about his story. Later on down the line, I found out that he was dealing with some depression and things of that nature. But one day I was in my bedroom, minding my own business, la-di-dee, la-di-da, and I heard a loud noise. So I ran next door to my playroom, and there he was. Long story short, he committed suicide. He shot himself in the mouth in my playroom, and I consider it witnessing it because I heard the noise, and I immediately ran next door, and my mom tried to shield me from seeing it, but as she was closing the door, I could see the image of him, you know, leaning against the wall, the blood splattered all over the wall, and my playroom from his suicide.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that stayed with you over the years?
It did. I can say it does not make me cry or upset in a way. It was kind of like I don't want to say matter-of-factly, but it just happened. But it did. The image does stay with me because of the juxtaposition of it. A playroom and a child's toys, that's something that's, you know, you associate with innocence and things of that nature. And so to know that something so tragic happened, and I witnessed it at such an early age, and he chose to do it where he did it, that does stay with me, and sometimes I wonder the why behind that.
Is it something that you were able to block out of your memory as you grew up?
Some of it. Now, for his funeral, I didn't really understand what suicide was. So at his funeral, I remember asking my dad, you know, what happened? And my dad gave me a very child-friendly explanation, I guess. And I remember being a bit confused on his funeral back at our home when I could see everyone sobbing. I just didn't emotionally understand why, so I went and hid in my bedroom. And I remember hiding on the side of my bed just because I knew that people were crying. I didn't fully get it, and I knew that I didn't want to be a part of it. So I guess that was a way of me sort of distancing myself from it.
How did it affect your family?
Oh, my dad took it very, very hard because he was very close to this brother. This brother was one who... he kind of felt like, I guess, like a black sheep in a way. And so I'm not sure if my dad maybe, well, it's common for a person to maybe blame themselves or wonder, why did I not notice X, Y, Z or whatever. But it was the first time that I remember seeing my father cry. It's mentioned every now and then, but I know for me, it kind of motivated me to work towards preventing things of that nature for other people.
I can only imagine.
Mm-hmm.
What would you like our audience to take from this story?
I would say please try to get yourself into other coping mechanisms before your depression or your stress even gets to the point to where you will contemplate something like that. That is why with Assurient Arts or other work that I do, I encourage people to write out their problems, speak their issues, find a safe space to express yourself so that it doesn't get to that point. It's a permanent decision to something that may very well be very temporary.
Very well said. Suicide is one of the most difficult subjects for me to discuss. It has been a part of my life too many times. Several years ago, my family lost several close family friends in a relatively short period of time to suicide. This includes a funny and brilliant mother of four, followed by both of her two young adult children within a couple years of her suicide. I firmly believe that if suicide enters a child's circle, then it makes it a credible act for them to consider. That should be reason enough to stop any person from proceeding. But, sorry, the memories choke me up a little bit. I mean, I used to be angry at anyone who would destroy their loved ones and friends by destroying themselves. someone who would force children to explain a parent, siblings, or friend's suicide for the rest of their lives, thereby adding a difficult narrative to the child's life. So I'm asking you to please grab a pen and or plug this number into your phone right now and share it with everyone you know. It's the number that saves lives. It's the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. It's 800-273-8255. Again, that's 800-273-8255. Suicide is one of those taboos, and we need to be brave enough to discuss it with the young people in our lives and our friends. If there's someone you sense may be drifting away from the activities and people they love and enjoy, if you suddenly see them giving away possessions, you need to sit down and talk with them, because sometimes you only have one chance to get involved and to at least offer a lifeline. You are listening to my guest storyteller, Debrina Sandifer, on So What's Your Story? On Houston's only community radio station, 90.1 KPFT Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.9 in Huntsville. I'm your host, Greg Audell, with Nicole Rocherlin at the control board. And actually, tonight, we have Teddy Puig at the control board. We are excited. It is Teddy's first night running the board, and he's doing a great job. And as always, Floyd the Wonder Dog is sitting in my lap suggesting questions for Debrina. If you like the guests and stories we bring you every week, please hop on over to kpft.org, select What's Your Story as the program you'd like to support, and make a generous contribution. Or better yet, become a sustaining member, because you actually have a lot of control over what programs stay on the air, and that is not a power you get when you watch ABC, CBS, or NBC. Now, I also need to confess, you're listening to a broadcast featuring and produced by The Walking Wounded today. I managed to injure my eye this afternoon. Poor Debrina is recovering from strep. Nicole has some god-awful ailment, but she will not leave our program because, you know, she knows we depend on her. And Teddy seems healthy so far, but we're zeroing in on him. And, you know, Nicole, thanks to the hard work of our entire team, our outstanding guest tellers, our audience just continues to grow exponentially. It's a really exciting time for the show, our team, and our audience members, both new and old. And I think our new time slot is really helping people find us. So, Nicole, will you share a few of the many things you are doing that are helping bring new listeners to the show?
Well, first and foremost, I don't know if you guys know that I've made my face the face of So What's Your Story? I'm just kidding. We don't want
to scare. A lovely face it is.
We don't want to scare any listeners away. We want to bring them in. But definitely going out more to the community. And I'm so grateful to have our guest that we have here today, especially as she is going to be speaking about domestic violence, because So What's Your Story is going to be involved in a movie premiere on July 29th. Yes, at Match Theater on July 29th at 5 and 8 p.m.
You are just missed Entertainment Houston, Nicole.
Well, look, wonderful about this film is called Blink, and it's a story about domestic violence. And also, too, Precinct 7 has joined the writer, director, and creator of this wonderful film in his fight against domestic violence. So I'm grateful to have you here, and it's just we're doing things. Make sure you follow us on our Facebook page, and make sure you find out all the happenings, because we are the happening.
Well, we are. And, you know, we pride ourselves in entertaining you, bringing you stories that make you think. But, you know, we also strive to make a difference in your lives and hopefully give you some information you're not going to get just anywhere else. And I'm not sure if Nicole or Teddy are going to handle this next part. Teddy, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Thanks for having me, Greg.
You know, if I recall, we brought you in one day just to see what the show was like, and you just keep coming back every Wednesday.
Yeah.
What has the experience been like for you of getting to know KPFT and actually getting to run the board for a station? A year ago, did you see yourself doing this?
Oh, not at all. You know, it's just been such a great way to get to know my city better and experience the culture more, you know?
I agree. I think I tell people, you know, if you stay in the conference room at the station for about 24 hours, you're going to see every community member, every community group come through these doors at one time or another. And it really is a great way to get to know the city. And we are so proud that you've worked hard. You know, you've watched Nicole and, you know, we're proud to have you on the team. Maybe you would be able to talk about Houston's prominence as one of the country's focal points for great storytelling. Would you share with our friends some of the amazing opportunities for storytelling in this amazingly diverse city?
Well, you know, there's the Mott, the first Tuesday of every month. It's always a great place to find some.
And where is that?
The Warehouse Live.
Warehouse Live. And you can buy your tickets through themoth.org or check out the Moth Houston Facebook page. Is that correct?
Yeah. You can find us on Facebook, and please share our page with your friends. Remember to like us.
That's right. And, you know, and that is part of why our audience is growing. A particular story or a particular guest will grab someone's attention. They'll post it on their Facebook page, and then everyone will go, wow, they're really cool. I mean, they're not just watching, you know, Sports Center. They're actually listening to smart people stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, you can also find us on YouTube. We have program clips from our shows and all of our past shows, too.
Those can be found on HoustonStorytellers.org. Is that correct? All you got to do is go to the radio program link on HoustonStorytellers.org. The Guild is also our proud sponsors. And their swaps meet the fourth Tuesday of every month at Temple Emmanuel at 1500 Sunset near Rice University. And as we remind you, do not miss our friends at the Moth at Warehouse Live the second Tuesday of every month. That's how most of us met, came together. And if you love a good story, you'll hear about 10 of them every single month at the Moth, and there's usually a prescribed theme. Hank, what is the theme for next month's Moth? Is it caution?
Caution.
All right. You know, you can usually
caution.
You can just about always see
right.
Hank or Warren or me or Mary there. Sometimes all of us. So if you do, please come up and say hi. I speak for all of the hosts when I say that we could not do this show and keep it at the level we expect it to be without the incredible work of our behind-the-scenes team, as well as the efforts of the KPFT staff, volunteers, and sustaining members. Thanks to everyone who helps make So What's Your Story the powerhouse program it is. Now, Debrina, your next story is about a subject I have felt strongly about since I was in elementary school. I really have. I suspect a lot of folks will relate. Will you share your second story with us?
Sure. So, excuse me, my second story is another childhood story. Now we're going further along, up into my elementary phase or whatever you want to call it. So, you know, in school they have us to do what? What's one of the first things we do in the morning? We say the Pledge of Allegiance. And so I think you get so caught up in it that you're no longer really realizing what you're saying to a certain degree. Well, for me, I've always been an inquisitive individual, always kind of challenging the whys and the hows of things that are asked of me or the way that our world operates. So I don't know what sparked it, but one day I guess I really thought about what we were saying. And when it gets to the part of with liberty and justice for all, that really stayed with me for a bit because I felt like I was saying something that was false. I did not believe that I saw people in my family or people that I knew or stories that I read or saw on the television. It wasn't liberty and justice for all. Historically, it has not been liberty and justice for all. So I made the executive decision, per se. I just stopped saying the Pledge of Allegiance. So I was respectful about it. I would stand, and I got it kind of a... I went through phases. So at one point I would stand and say the majority of it except for that part. And then by the time I was in high school, I just wasn't saying most of the thing at all. I would stand again respectfully, but I just wasn't saying it because I didn't believe in pledging something that I felt was false. I just didn't believe in it. It was false. Why would I be starting my day every day with a lie? I didn't want to do it.
Pretty smart kid.
Right. And so that's a smart kid, and it's a smart kid and a smart adult, but these are the types of things that I get challenged on sometimes as well because just standing up for what I believe in. So What that ended up doing was sparking various things in my life. That's another reason why we have Assurient Arts, because it challenges certain things. It challenges different roles or expectations that we put on various demographics, women, ethnicities, regional, whatever, sexual preference, whatever. It challenges it. And I think as long as we continue to try to hold ourselves under an umbrella of something that is false, we will continue to see history repeating itself and having these issues. So it's inspired me creatively. Most things in my life inspire me creatively, just like the witnessing suicide. As an adult, I ended up writing a poem about it entitled Red Rivers. And for this particular instance, with the Pledge of Allegiance deal, it ended up inspiring the title of a screenplay that I wrote. It started off as a short play. It deals with and questions some of the current issues that we're seeing in this country in which people of color are being gunned down unjustly, or, you know, some people believe that it's unjust. And so I wrote the piece. Normally my title is the last bit of a piece. So I wrote the piece. And when I was thinking about a title, what could be my title? Justice for All from the Pledge of Allegiance came to mind. But for the title, it's more so as a question, because it challenges, do we really have justice for all? The answer is no. So we explore that in the piece. It ended up becoming a short screenplay because the concept is more, it lends itself more to a cinematic style, which is great. And like I mentioned, it explores an unjust shooting of a young man of color, but there's a twist to it. When the police officer did it, he was not on duty at the time. It happened when he was off duty. And then there are some other intricate details of the story that lends itself as to why the piece really is Crash meets Do the Right Thing. So that's a portion of that second story.
Were you ever challenged by teachers about not saying the pledge?
No, for me, most of my schools that I went to were very ethnically diverse, so I knew that someone basically would not understand the why I was doing that. So I didn't make a big deal out of it. I would still stand. I don't know if my teachers even noticed that I wasn't saying it, but I never made a big deal of it. I never tried to rally other people to do as I was doing. I just simply didn't do it.
You know, I'm curious because you've been a teacher too, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
So have you ever been the one to sort of require kids to say the pledge or the Texas pledge?
Well, I feel like I would be a hypocrite if I did that. So when we would have that time, the kids would stand, especially after 9/11, we would have, you know, the integration of the moment of silence, which I totally get. But I would always encourage all of my students, use this time to acknowledge or, you know, think about or whatever, anyone that you feel like has perished for a negative reason or whatever. So I never forced them to say it. Everyone would stand, but I never forced them to say it, no.
I do not envy you being in that position for something that's been on your mind your whole life. I can mm-hmm. just see you when the time for the pledge comes standing there going,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, you know, groupthink is one of the last things KPFT or the Pacifica Network stands for. Well, Teddy, how's it going in there?
Doing great, Greg.
All right.
On the board, staying busy.
All right. Good, good. Is it making sense? Are you comfortable with it?
Sure.
you've got Hank behind you, telling on you.
Yes.
And Nicole, Nicole, will you tell us a little bit more about the premiere you were talking about?
Sure. Absolutely. And like I said, I'm really excited about the premiere because it is definitely a story of domestic violence. It's pretty graphic. And I will be putting the trailer up as well as the advertisement up on our So What's Your Story Facebook page.
Oh, wow.
And our Instagram account as well.
When will that be up?
It will be up by the weekend, guys.
Good, good.
I'm under the weather. Let me get a little better. I promise. I've been sleeping all day.
Well,
but like I said, So What's Your Story will be on the scene, and he has two showings from 5, 1 at 5 and 1 at 8, and it's going to be at Match Theater, which is also right here in Midtown. And so July 29th, you definitely want to be there and support domestic violence because it is a serious issue, not just with women, but also with children and males as well. And I've come to find out that the statistics show in Houston, the rate is outrageous of domestic violence cases that have been reported. And just thinking about those are the ones that have been reported, but what about the ones that haven't? And right. what about the ones that ended fatally? So we definitely want to support the cause and come together as
Thank
a community.
You.
That's what we're here for.
You know, and as I say, we're trying to make a difference, and so what's your story? So we're proud to come out to events and support them. And if you have an event that you'd like one of us to come out and maybe speak or tell a story at, you can send any of us an email. You can send it to me at greg@kpft.org, and we'll be proud to consider your request. This is Greg Audell, and you are listening to So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 Houston with my guest storyteller, Debrina Sandifer. You know, a fear of public speaking is the number one fear. And for most of my life, no one had a worse case of stage terror than me. I am absolutely serious. I would sweat. I would be sick. I was awful. Yet, the more I was in a position that required me to speak to large groups, the more comfortable I became. And surprisingly now, I thoroughly enjoy speaking. So What's Your Story team wants to help you become the most comfortable speaker you can be with our Tips for the Teller segment. Whether you are a student, a budding storyteller, a hardworking career person, or a prisoner trying to improve yourself, one of the most important things you can do is to become comfortable with sharing your story. Today's tip is from National Moth Champion Margot Leitner, from her book, Long Story Short, The Only Storytelling Guide You'll Ever Need. Now, I will have to say I have a problem with this title because I would recommend Dr. Hank's Storytelling Guide as well. So I will say that I will amend Ms. Leitner's title to One of Two Only Storytelling Guides You Will Ever Need. Good stories are universal. Your story needs to be framed inclusively. There has to be something your audience identifies with. For example, a student might begin a story, "So I went to Yale." Now, the story to come could be really interesting and funny, about being seized with paranoia, that a car was following him. But his opener, "I went to Yale," didn't mean for the audience what the student thought it did. For him, "I went to Yale" immediately communicated, which is in New Haven, Connecticut, which has some really dangerous neighborhoods in it. But all anyone in the audience heard was, "I went to a fancy exclusive school," and a lot of them tuned him out just then. It was an invitation for the most of the audience to tune him out, for audiences to totally tune out, and to try to think about the user experience of your story. You know, think about what they're hearing versus what you're saying, and it'd be good to run it. That's why it's good to run your talk, whether it's a business talk or, you know, any other type of story. Run it past someone first and make sure they're hearing what you want them to hear. And most importantly, whatever your subject, enjoy sharing the story you want to share with your audience. They will be able to detect it. Debrina, did you ever have a fear of public speaking or any fear of performing?
Absolutely. So what's weird about it is I developed that as an adult.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I went just the opposite way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the common case for most people. But for me, I started doing public speaking or whatever at a very early age. When I hit like around college age, I developed stage fright. So it was in reverse.
Why do you think that was?
I think it's because some of my passion for acting ended up being stripped out of me through a couple of unpleasant experiences. So it was a part of me digging my heels in the sand saying, well, if I have to do it your way, I won't do it at all. And just from not doing it and not being used to it anymore, then that developed.
What advice would you give someone who wants to improve their public speaking skills and overcome the stage fright? I mean, it appears to me when I see you that you don't suffer from stage fright now, or do you, and just hide it really, really well?
I think for most public speakers or performers, you have that adrenaline that kicks in that sometimes makes you feel like you may be nervous. So I still experience that. But what I do is I tap into and channel the goal or the mission of what I am talking about, the importance of what I have to say.
I love that.
Yes.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
That is an excellent tip. And that sort of goes along with today's tip, you know, of keeping your audience in mind. What do you want them to hear and come away with?
Mm-hmm.
And I do find if you are genuinely excited about conveying that to them, the audience will pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
And it may sound strange, but even a eulogy, you need to feel it. You need to believe in it. You know, you're not just reading words. Your words convey emotion. And if you do that well, it doesn't matter where you are. People will remember what you say. And also remember, your audience is always rooting for you. Mm-hmm. So right now, you know, like before today's interview, did you have butterflies or were you okay?
I did have butterflies because, you know, I get invited to do guest speaking at various places. Assuring Arts actually does training for non-arts people, like in corporate America, who need to speak publicly or present things. But when someone is asked, I'm used to talking about a show or da-da-da, which I love that. That is personal in a way, too. But for this, it's like someone directly saying, tell your story.
It
or
is.
Stories from you on a public platform. I was like, which story should I pick that will be interesting enough for other people to care about?
Right.
So that was an interesting process.
It always, always is. While your first two stories were powerful, they also the subject matter drained me a little bit, particularly your first. Any chance of your third story being a little bit lighter?
Absolutely. So, my great-grandmother... my third story will focus completely on her. So with our relationship in the beginning of my life, I was very ill as a child. I really came into this world against all odds. My mother was not supposed to be able to have children because of an accident. The nature of my birth was very high risk. I was a C-section baby, and there was some mishaps with the doctor with what they were doing. And long story short, I nearly died, me and my mother. I was the firstborn, and so my great-grandmother and my grandmother kind of intervened as two women who had more experience, with dealing with children. I also have a respiratory disease that I was diagnosed with at birth as well, which is a bit hereditary, and they had more experience that as well. So I spent a lot of time with them. So my grandmother has now passed away, but my great grandmother is still here kicking. And so at the beginning of my life, spending a lot of time with her, we would have outdoor time. She would make me things and feed me raw vegetables to help with some of the, you know, health things that I was having. And she would always focus on encouraging me as well. So since that particular time, of my life, and, you know, getting older and older, she would always say, keep going and don't look back. Keep going and don't look back. So I actually have that tattooed on me in her handwriting. It says, keep going. And, you know, it's dot, dot, dot. And I look in the mirror and I say, and don't look back. I have a ladybug as well because she calls me ladybuggers. But I have tons. My third story is like a combination of little anecdotes and different things from her, because she's just been a light force in my life. So when you know, with the preparation for this, when you would say, okay, you know, pick the stories you want to think about. When I think about my story overall, it's a story of beating odds. It's a story of resilience, and it's a story of inspiration, not only for myself and others. And I believe that I got that directly from her. She's from Shreveport, Louisiana. That's kind of like, you know, her story. She's from Shreveport, Louisiana. They would call her a redheaded devil because she had red hair, and she was hell on heels in a way, basically. She's a very small lady, but she packs a powerful punch. So if I had to describe her, I would describe her as pearls and pistols. So she'll have on her pearls, her red lipstick, but she's still that red-headed devil. Even at almost 100 years old, she's still the red-headed devil. So I would always look to her for inspiration. And I don't think that even to this day she even realizes how much she has meant to me. I'm not as much as a people pleaser. But she is absolutely one person I do want to make proud. And circling back a bit, she endured some abuse throughout her life. And so she's another inspiration for me to give people a voice, to fight for those particular causes, whether it's abuse or it is domestic or it's suicide prevention or any of that. She is a direct inspiration for that as well. And so, she's gone to many of my shows. I had the opportunity to portray Lena Horne, and I borrowed.
Oh, I love Lena Horne, mm-hmm. And I got to meet her when I was a kid, but I'll tell you that in a minute. Continue on.
So I got to be a part of my costuming design. So I borrowed one of her fur coats, and it was kind of like a tribute to her because for me, she is my Lena Horne. For me, she does represent vintage glamour for me because, That's who she is. Even to this day, she does not wear flat shoes. She goes anywhere that hair is done. She has on her rouge that she calls it. She puts on her blush. She has on her red lipstick, all of those things. So it's great to see her in the audience. And I have a picture of us back to back with me having her fur coat on as Lena. And she was there. She's always rooted for me. And then when I told her about Assurient Arts, this is not the first business that I've started, but I told her about it. And I said, you know, we're being active and we're doing these different things and we're bringing in artists from outside of the city and things like that. And she said, oh, my heart. That's what she refers to me as. Oh, my heart. You've worked so hard for this and you got it. And I started crying. Because she's amazing. But, you know, at this point, she's agreed to go get matching tattoos with me.
And she's 100?
Yes. Well, she's 98, so she's close to 100. She doesn't have any tattoos. It's not really, you know, people of her generation didn't do that. It was like you're an outcast or a crazy person if you did that. But she has agreed to get matching tattoos with me. We have not decided. I know that sounds crazy, but that's the nature of our relationship. We have not decided exactly what it is that we will be getting, but it will definitely be small, and it will definitely be something that is matching. And she's going to go do it with me. I'm looking for a specialist currently because, you know, elderly skin is different. You have to use a different method of doing it, a tattoo. But she's agreed to do it with me. And like I said, I have her handwriting on my back as a reminder to always keep going and not look back. She has so many different anecdotes. Like one time I was driving. She was in the car with me. And these people were driving kind of recklessly. And she's like, oh, wait a minute. They're trying to create an accident to get some money, but they're not going to get anything, but their butt whooped and their lives took. And I'm just like, oh, girl, please.
I think she would make a great guest.
She might. She has tons of stories. I have footage of her. I'm working on a documentary that's inspired by her, entitled Pearls and Pistols, because I want to document her story. I want to do it theatrically, but also via film. So, yeah.
Oh, I'll be there opening night.
Wonderful.
Next week, Warren Holloman will be with us, and his guest will be some folks familiar to you. It will be our own Mary Edgerton, myself, and unfortunately, Dr. Hank will, I believe, won't be with us next week. You know, we like to have these kind of family get-together shows once every couple of months, and it's just a lot of fun when we can share our stories with you. And Hank, is Hank nearby?
I'm right here.
Oh, all right. I'm sorry. You're not in my
field
of view.
I'm right here. Right here. But when you said Hank will unfortunately not be with us, sounds like I'm dead.
Well, you don't. No, we're not counting on that necessarily.
No, I understand. I told you Warren was absolutely shocked when I told him I probably wouldn't be here. He says, well, what do you mean? What do I mean? I may be gone. Yeah, I don't know if I didn't think that was
ever possible.
Oh, you
know what? This is good. I'm thinking of a theme. Maybe we can tell stories about Hank next week.
There you go. Comedy night.
You know, I was planning to be at last night's moth performance, but unfortunately I couldn't make it. And did you make it, Hank?
I did make it, and it was a good night. It was a great theme. It was mobbed. It was the theme was about beauty. And I did have the good fortune of telling the story, and it was a lot of fun.
I would have just stood there and looked at the audience.
Yeah,
well, if the theme was beauty,
it was
you know, and I'll tell you what, I'm ready to announce something that you and I have talked about. We have talked for the last couple of years about having a So What's Your Story story evening.
That's right.
And I believe we are going to do that in September.
We are.
We're sort of circling in September 16th, but we'll let you know that by next week.
That'd be
but
great.
It's going to be a benefit for KPFT. And, you know, if you like the stories we hear, if you go to any of the storytelling competitions and just want to have a relaxing night, it's going to be on a Saturday night, and we'll tell you more as it comes. But you're going to be able to make that, aren't you, Hank?
Absolutely. Yeah, I make everything. You know, there you go.
You miss
one night, and suddenly I'm Mr. Tardy.
I guess that's why you're the University of Houston Downtown Teacher of the Year, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you know, maybe. I don't know. But thank you.
Absolutely. Now, where are you going to be next week?
Well, we're going to go to Kerrville, just going to relax a little bit. We're going to take Simon, my little long-haired chihuahua. Peggy, my wife, is just thrilled about that. But nevertheless, he'll be fine. I can't go anywhere without him.
You know
how that feels.
I have Floyd sleeping in my lap right now.
Right. But it should be a lot of fun, just getting out for a little bit and relaxing.
Now, another event that I would tell you all about is Hank and I will be competing on September 8th at University of Houston downtown for the yearly Moth Grand Slam.
Right. Actually, it's the main campus.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. The main campus.
Right. Cullen Auditorium.
And I would suggest you get online and get your tickets early, because last year not only did it sell out, but they had to turn down over 300 people at the door.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, the theme this year is Out on a Limb.
Right.
And I know Hank always has about 10 stories for every theme in the encyclopedia in his head.
Well,
however, I'm still wrestling with the topic myself.
Well, your repertoire is pretty deep, too.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I just feel like... You've got the stories at the ready. It takes me a little time to form them.
I don't know. Would you share with us
a little bit about the story you shared last night at the Moth competition?
I'd be happy to. That would be great.
Please do.
Well, it was about beauty, and it was well received. It was a very serious story about some good friends of mine, and it went like this. You know, beauty is used to describe typical things like flowers and physical appearance, but it's also used to describe bizarre things like baby buggies and backpacks and shower curtains. And I remember one of my famous examples of beauty is when the ziti was brought to Tony Soprano's table, and he said, "What? Beautiful," right? So the word beauty is used pretty often. And to me, it's a more, you know, endemic, it's a more latent kind of meaning. It's the kind of meaning that allows us to dig deep and to find the really precious things around us, sort of like the sounds that surrounded the time my son was born, or the sound of my heart when I fell in love with my wife, the right wife, right? And one of the examples that I think about in terms of the kind of beauty that I actually saw in front of me and will never forget, made an indelible impression, was in the mid-1970s when I befriended a couple by the name of Marty and Paul Solomon. Now, Marty was the kind of guy who developed a symphony of sappiness and romance. He was able to do the kinds of things nobody else could ever do. And you know how many of us say to ourselves, oh, we know this perfect couple, and then you eventually find out that there's something going on behind closed doors that makes them less than perfect. Well, this couple was perfect, and there's no exaggeration here, no hyperbole. I remember going over their house for dinner many times, 20, 30 maybe, and they always did the same thing. They loved cooking together, and when they did, Paul always put on some music, and they would dance before dinner, right in front of us, all the guests, and they would dance during dinner and sometimes afterwards. It was really the most romantic thing you've ever seen. It beat Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. I'm not kidding. In any event, you know, years later, I moved to upstate New York for a year. I had a job at Hamilton College, and I get a call from Marty, which wasn't atypical because we spoke many, many times, and she sounded funny, and she told me that Paul was dead. Died of a heart attack, 42 years old, healthy man. So I thought. I couldn't make it to the funeral, so I made it really to the tail end of the funeral and then to the reception afterwards, which was held at their house. And at this reception, many of their friends were there. I recognized many of them. We talked and had a good time and sort of caught up, and I wanted to spend a few minutes with Marty. And when she went into the kitchen, I followed her, and I told her how so desperately sorry that I was, and I told her how many fond memories I had of our times together, especially watching them dance. And she started to cry. And I said, oh my God, I just made a big mistake, and I apologized to her. And she said, oh no, 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 no. No, Hank, you did not make a mistake. I'm so glad you brought that up. And then she shared that for many months, he still wanted to dance with her every time they had dinner. And that was every day because they cooked at home almost every day. And for several months, she told me, you know, I kept telling Paul, I'm busy. Okay, we used to do that all the time, but come on, do we have to do it every night? And he had a great sense of humor. So he kept saying, yes, I want to dance with you. And she said, not right now, Paul, not right now. And she said that last week, this is the time I was there at their house for the reception after the funeral. And she said, with eyes that I'll never forget, they were glistening with love. And she said, last week, we were cooking together, and Paul asked me to dance, and I said to him what I've been saying to him the last several months, which is, Paul, I'm busy, just, you know, please leave me alone. So he went into the room and he took a nap, the bedroom, and I went in 20 minutes later to wake him up, and he died. He had a massive coronary. And I just sat there on a stool by the island in her kitchen. It seemed like we were silent for hours, you know what I mean? But it was just a few minutes. And she looked at me, and she smiled the way she used to smile at him. And I was transformed. I suddenly felt incredible. And she said, what I really wish, Hank, what I really wish more than anything else is that he was here right now, because if he was, I'd insist that he play some music. And he always played great stuff, old stuff, good stuff, you know, Smokey, The Temptations, Johnny Rivers. Boomers know what I'm talking about. Those of you who don't, you have no idea what you are missing. And she said, I wish he'd play one of those, and then I would dance with him all night, and I'd never stop, and everything that would be on the stove, I'd just let it burn. And it was beauty incarnate, Greg, because what I saw were eyes and a voice that said it all. You had to be there to get a picture, but I hope that that image shares something with you. It's not about mountains. It's not about flowers. It's about heart. It's all about heart.
Wow. That image is going to stay with me, Hank. I got goosebumps, and I've been thinking about so many missed opportunities in my own life. It's funny. I remember when I was five, my grandparents were visiting, and my grandfather used to make his own lather and shave with a straight razor.
Oh, my gosh.
But Speed Racer was on. My grandmother said, you really, my mother said, you know, the last day they were visiting us, she goes, you need to go see how he shaves because no one shaves like this anymore. But Speed Racer was on. So I said, you know, I'll see him next time, you know, he visits. Well, there was no next time, you know, and you can't count on the next time, whether it's for that dance, you know, whether it's to share that special moment. And I really did learn at that age that I do my best to take those opportunities. And I do know there's a good chance that the people I love could be taken from me. And that was a beautiful story.
Well, I very much appreciate the opportunity to tell it. You know, we go to these venues and we tell stories, and there are about 600 people there. And that's a great feeling. But, you know, sometimes the idea of sharing this with all of our listeners here isn't only important, but it also lets them know something about us. Debrina, beauty, when you think of beauty, what are you thinking about?
You know, I'm still caught up in this story that you told, because I really do think that beauty is in the moments that we kind of forget, like what you were mentioning. It made me also think about a play by Thornton Wilder entitled Our Town.
Our Town.
Yeah.
Wow, yes. Oh, Our Town. Mm-hmm. If you have not read the book, if you have not seen the play, right now make it your life's mission to do both of those things, and you will never take the special moments and the special people in your life for granted again.
Yeah, and actually, if you've never read it, lie to us, because we can't believe you haven't. You know, that's what I tell my students all the time. How many of you have read Mice and Men? Never mind that I asked that question. Everyone lie to me and tell me you did. Raise your hand. And I, you know,
you're kind of like that with Gershwin music, too.
Oh, my God. You know that I used, this is honest to God the truth, and Peggy's listening and she's a witness. I used to tell, you know what my gauge was when I used to date before I was fortunate enough to meet
I'm kind of
Peggy?
Afraid to ask.
Well,
go ahead.
You're going to like my, if they didn't know about George Gershwin, I dumped him. Because I thought, you know what? If you don't know who George Gershwin is, how can you possibly claim to be an interesting, cultured person? And how dare you suggest that you're around my age? Because, you know, how do you do that? How do you do that, right? I had to come up with something.
We all have our litmus tests. I got set up on a blind date with this woman one time, and before the appetizers were served, she said, oh, I'm so happy I can tell you're a Republican. That was a very, very short date, let me tell you.
Wow. Yeah.
And, you know, Hank, I wanted you to share that story because I'm sick that you're not going to be with me and Warren and Mary next week. And so I wanted you to be able to share, you know, every one of your stories generally leaves me with goosebumps. So, you know, we will be sad you won't be here next week, but thank you for indulging us with that story.
Well, you're very, very welcome. And again, I appreciate the opportunity. You know, I'm thinking that after doing this show for 8 years, oh my God, that's almost a decade. After actually, it really is almost a decade because when I first did this, it was once a month. But in
wasn't
event,
it like 5:30 in the morning?
Well, it was 6 o'clock on a Monday morning. First it was 1 hour on the fourth Friday of the month, which was a great hour. It was 9 to 10, and then they rewarded me by giving me 6 a.m. on Monday. Hello.
Wow.
So it was really hard to get a guest here at 5:15.
I can,
you know,
imagine.
Unless you had to be over 60 because nobody else got up at that hour. So my guest repertoire was sort of minimal, but
wow.
It was a good show, and they really had us compete with the traffic, you know, Monday morning traffic. And it was hard because you couldn't exactly do a call in. Okay, everybody of you grab your cell phones while you're on the Katy Freeway. That would not have been a smart move. So yeah. I was really sort of limited. And then we went to that Thursday night 10 o'clock spot. And eventually I was fortunate enough to grab you guys to help. And here we are.
Well, your hard work laid the foundation that got us this wonderful spot and this hour-long format, which is great because, you know, we often said in our old format of 30 minutes, it seemed like at about the 20-minute mark we were really getting into it.
Absolutely.
And then you had to start planning to wrap up the show, and you're thinking, I have so much more I want to ask.
Right.
You know, I'll tell you what, I did not know that Debrina was going to mention the most beautiful woman who I have ever met. Lena Horne, I had a crush on even as a kid.
And that's another gauge. People who don't know her, we don't want to hear from
no.
you.
No. If you don't
get
know
on
Lena
Wikipedia,
Horne,
for God's sakes.
And I'll tell you, on the Pacifica flash drive that has 1,350 hours, there is a good bit of Lena Horne on there. But some of you know that when I was young, I had a very strange hobby of meeting anyone I wanted to meet. And so I, through some finagling, I got box seats to Lena Horne when I was like 16. And I took my mother, and we were invited to visit with her in her dressing room, Miss Horne, after the show. She was more elegant, more beautiful, more charming than you would ever imagine. We were sitting on a couch talking to her as people were coming in and out. Two older ladies. Now, Lena Horne was in her 70s at that point, but she sure didn't look it. So two women came in who did look like they were in their 70s. And they were like, oh, Miss Horne, you're so beautiful. And one woman said, do you mind if I ask, have you ever had a facelift? And Lena Horne looked at her and she said, you know, I have never done it, but I'm thinking about it very seriously. She goes, do you know someone who's good in Houston? And the woman was like, yes. You know, and she said, well, give me your card. She goes, and, you know, I'd like to get his name from you. After the women left, my mother looked horrified. And she said, Miss Horne, you do not need plastic surgery. And Lena Horne said, oh, I know that, sweetie, but if those women were asking me about it, then it's something they've thought about, and I don't want to make them feel bad, and it's going to make them feel better if they think I'd think about it, too. Now, that is class, ladies and gentlemen.
That is a great example of class.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'll always remember Lena Horne with a big smile. I loved her in films. I loved her in music. But to me, she was always the star who was incredibly kind to people she didn't need to be. And that includes my mother and I and the two women who I'm sure buzzed, you know, to all of their friends about how they're going to get Lena Horne, her plastic surgeon.
And Greg, this is why you need a journal. This is a great example of a story about class. About class.
You're right. I do need
and
to get a
I'm
journal.
I'm too old to remind you. I forget stuff. You need a journal.
You do a good job of reminding me.
Well, I just jotted it down just in case.
Now, Debrina, do you have any performances coming up you'd like to share with us?
I am stage managing 10 by 10, which is always hosted by Scriptwriters Houston. It's been done for over 25 years. This year, it will be at Deluxe Theater off of Lyons Avenue, and that will be at the end of August. Folks can look for more information on that on their Facebook page.
And is that the show that I saw you in? I think it was around this time last year?
No, that one was for Mildred's Umbrella Museum of Dysfunction.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. You know, folks, you really don't realize how much theater, how much storytelling is going on in this town.
Mm-hmm.
You have no excuse to ever be bored in the city of Houston.
Can I do a plug, by the way?
Absolutely.
Peggy and I went to see Always Patsy Cline, and it's gotten unbelievable reviews, and no matter how high the reviews are, how great they are. Not high enough. Incredible. And you don't have to be a Patsy Cline fan.
Well, who isn't a Patsy Cline fan?
I mean, I don't know. But if you're not, you will be, because this was one of the best productions I've ever seen anywhere. And I go to a lot of theater. This is at Stages, and it's still there. And it really demonstrates the depth of Houston talent. Unbelievable.
And Stages is just a little gem in the Houston theater.
Oh, it sure is.
You know, because one of my hats I wear is as a producer. I discovered when I was producing shows a few years ago that New York City has 18,500 theater seats. Pretty impressive, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Houston has 22,000.
Right.
And they are full most nights. People don't realize what an amazing theater city this is. And, you know, like you, I go to theaters, you know, some have 50 seats and some have 800, you know, but I think the theater in this town blows the lid off just about anywhere in the country.
It absolutely does. It really does.
So, Debrina, if folks want to find out more about you, is there a website where they can find out about you?
Because I'm the founder and executive artistic director and programming manager for Assurient R. Arts, that's a good place to start. So that's assurientarts.com, E-S-U-R-I-E-N-T-A-R-T-S.com.
Is there anyone you'd like to send a shout out to? I'm hoping that your wonderful grandmother is listening.
I talked to her on the way over here, and I was like, remind me of where you were born again, because I forget.
How old is your grandmother?
She's 98 years old.
See, I lost my grandmother 3 years ago, and she was 98.
Mm-hmm.
And she was from a small little Mormon Wyoming family. And I just felt like it was a portal to the past. I'm a Houston city boy. You know, when am I ever going to be friends with someone who's almost 100 years old who came from a completely different background? I am guessing your grandmother came from a very different background than you.
She absolutely did, but it's funny, like, we're kindred spirits, so we go to happy hour sometimes together, all kinds of different
You've got to let me meet this woman. I think I'm going to want her as a guest on the show.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, my great-grandfather died at 104. He smoked two packs of Winston's every day, and I tell everybody it must have been the cigarettes. He got married at 91.
Imagine if he hadn't smoked, he'd live to 150.
Unbelievable.
Well, Debrina, thank you so much for sharing your stories, your insights, and your life experiences with us tonight. And I look forward to seeing you at more art openings, more theater readings, more poetry readings, and maybe right back here with us one of these days.
Yes, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed the experience.
Yes.
Brian and Jason are next with To Tell the World, another class act on KPFT, and I really do enjoy their program, and I highly recommend you stay tuned for it. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, whether you need a break from the day, you're turning in for the night, or you're just chilling out, join us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. You keep loving a great story, and we will keep bringing them to you. And above all, be actively good to each other. Mary, Warren, Hank, Nicole, Teddy, and Floyd the Wonder Dog and I will forever be reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace, my friends.
Veterans Retreat Center and Project Respect host a back-to-school youth talent showcase on Saturday, August 5th from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Contestants ages 5 to 18 enter the showcase free of charge with a chance to win a trophy. The Veterans Retreat Center will also hand out free school supplies to local students. For more information, contact Teresa Pham at 832-452-4598 or by email at veterans. Veterans Retreat on Mount Houston at gmail.com. KPFT Houston. KPFT wrapped up its Summer Sizzle Fun Drive on June 30th. Thanks to all who contributed. Your support keeps independent music, news, and ideas on the air. Although KPFT received many generous financial contributions during this summer campaign, we remain a bit short of our financial goal. If you value the unique voices found on Houston's Radio for Peace, contribute at kpft.org or text your donation to KPFT to 41444. As Pacifica Radio's founder Lewis Hill stated, "As long as I can communicate, I can create. As long as I can create, I am free." Help us keep free speech radio alive today and for future generations. KPFT Houston.
Hay un poeta, un artesano y un profeta.